This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on high-rise flats and fire regulations. I am joined by Mr. Richard Power from Lamb Chambers in London. Richard is the head of his chambers and he is a senior property barrister who has advised and represented clients on a very high level in connection with disputes concerning trusts of land, proprietary, estoppel, restrictive covenants, landlord and tenant disputes and on leases and forfeitures, just to name but a few. Richard has also represented cases in the Supreme Court and he has written many articles and delivered a vast number of seminars and webinars. Richard, thank you very much for joining me today.
Good morning, Hattie.
Good morning to you. High-rise flats and fire regulations. And I was just explaining to Richard that we have had a vast number of our listeners writing in with issues on properties that they own in 3, 4, 5 floor and above flats where they purchased the property, being reassured that the cladding and the fire regulations all adhered. And then once they're in, they're being told they actually don't adhere. So obviously we're having this conversation because following the tragedy of the Grenfell Tower that took place on the 14th of June 2017, 72 people lost their lives, 70 others were injured and 223 people escaped. I mean, it was the second deadliest structural fire in the UK since 1988, Richard. And, you know, and it all started by a malfunctioning fridge freezer on the fourth floor of the building.
Yeah.
And we've got findings from a report. The first report that was released in October 29 on the Grenfell identified that the building's exterior did not comply with regulations. And that was the central reason for the spread of the fire. I mean, Grenfell was built actually in 1972. Doesn't feel that long ago to me for some reason, but it is now, isn't it, I guess?
Well, it is, yeah.
So I guess the first question I think that would be very useful for us to talk about, Richard, is has the fire regulations, safety regulations in the UK really changed after the Grenfell disaster? Some housing associations are claiming that they have.
Well, the simple answer to that question is that the wording hasn't. I mean, there's been a lot of interpretation and advice notes issued by the government, and they've taken various steps to ensure fire safety. And there are various bills passing through Parliament at the moment, but the building regulations themselves, the wording has not changed. The wording is actually very simple.
I was looking at Dame Judith Hackett's review that actually prompted some of the changes to take place, or the recommendation for changes, wasn't it,
yes.
Richard? And a part of that, because there's actually a very useful document on the government website, and it said building owners and residents should be aware that government has committed to reform the regulatory system and agreed with the principles outlined with the Dame Judith Hackett's review.
There's no doubt that they will change in due course, but they haven't changed yet.
So anyone being told that they've changed, they haven't changed as yet.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the interpretation has changed. The one of the questions you posed to me was someone who bought their flat in 2019, and they were told that the regulations have changed since then. That's simply not right. They haven't changed since 2019. The same regulations enforced today are those from 2018, and they were amended from 2010, but they haven't changed.
Yes.
The interpretation may have changed.
Yes. No, I appreciate that. I mean, when purchasing a property, buyers are being reassured that buildings meet all fire regulations. And buyers are becoming aware now that the building does not meet the regulations at all. Because as we've just said, the regulations haven't actually changed yet. Can these buyers of these properties fight the company that owns the building?
Well, there are a couple of questions here. Firstly, if buyers have been told that since the Grenfell fire disaster, if they are told that cladding on their building is okay, then they should have cause for concern and they should take legal advice.
Yes.
So far as, what was the other thing you mentioned, Hattie?
Yes. So basically, if they're being told and reassured that their building meets the fire regulations, and obviously people are, wary that their building has got some sort of cladding on there or some sort of fire regulatory, maybe internally, that doesn't meet the fire regulations, and they've bought the building, the property, and then they're told, well, it doesn't meet regulations. They find out it doesn't meet regulations.
The first point, as I say, is if you had a survey, I'm surprised that surveyors would not have been aware after Grenfell, certainly in 2019, that there was a problem with cladding. And if anyone bought their property in 2019 and weren't alerted by their surveyor, if they had a survey, then there may be some recourse against the surveyor.
Well, that's a very interesting point, Richard, actually.
Well, I find it difficult to believe that after Grenfell and after the Hackett report and so on, surveyors were saying that buildings were okay if they had cladding on them, especially with this aluminium composite material that was the problem with Grenfell.
Yes. Yes, I think that's a very important point. And perhaps what buyers could do in this position, in the position of being told, look, your property's okay and all fire, you know, compliance with the fire regulations, is go back to their survey and actually have a good look at their survey and what their survey report said. I think that's a really good
They should definitely do that if they bought it after 2017. I mean, a surveyor couldn't be expected within a few months of Grenfell to know what the problem was. So there may be a defence there, but certainly in 2019
and 2018 as well,
I'd
say.
Look at your survey.
Yes.
The other part of the question, Hattie, was whether you could claim against the owner of the building.
Yes.
Well, I presume that we're talking about leaseholders and freeholders.
Yes, yes, yeah. We are, yes.
Well, the problem with that is that if the leaseholder, there'll be a covenant to put the place in repair and all that sort of thing. But the problem is that the leaseholders pay ultimately through their service charges. So they will be paying for the remediation, as they refer to it, themselves. Many of the freeholders will be right to manage companies, things like that. They may not have an awful lot of money. If you're talking about a developer, that's a different question. There's an act called the Defective Premises Act, 1972. And if the property is less than 6 years old, then you may have a claim under the Defective Premises Act.
Well, I guess I'm saying in the case where there is a leaseholder and a freeholder. So we're saying most freeholder companies may not have the funds to sort of pay out. And I'm going all the way to the end of this here, being that a leaseholder or leaseholders of a building successfully sue the freeholder on the basis that the building is not fire compliant with regulations. And what we're saying is the freeholder may not have the funds to pay out to remedy that. That
right.
It could be the case, but not necessarily a definitive that they may not have the funds.
Yeah.
But they could take action against the freeholder though, Richard, couldn't they?
Well, they could do, but the freeholder under the lease is almost certainly entitled to charge the tenant service charges. So if it costs $100,000 to replace the cladding, that $100,000 is divided up between the leaseholders, so they end up paying for it themselves.
Well, it's a double-edged sword then, isn't it? Because if you do get the freeholder, either by agreement or by going through any court action to say, we agree, we're going to change the cladding, we're going to make the building fire safe, then, as you say, the service charge that pays for all works to be carried out on a building will be affected, i.e. it will be the leaseholders that will be paying for that. And what about a potential claim on the basis that if they were not made aware that the building was safe, and I'm now discounting that any survey may have brought this up, it could be that, that the survey didn't pick up on it, let's just say. And the building has the leaseholders had to pay an extortionate amount of money to put it right. And I'm again talking about people that bought after the Grenfell disaster here. Yep. And let's say 2018, 2019. The financial losses directly to a leaseholder is the fact that their service charge may have gone up, for example, in 1 year. They may have had to make a big contribution to their service charge pot of, let's say, for argument's sake, £20,000. Yep. Can they then look at going after the freeholder for those losses?
When you say loss, the answer is probably no. The freeholder is not the person who's responsible. I mean, the freeholder has to keep the property in repair and will have a duty to get rid of unsafe cladding. But the main problem is with the builder. Now, if the property was built a long time ago, they will have disappeared.
Yeah, which is likely.
I mean, generally, my theme is that if you are in this problem, you need to get in touch with various action groups, because the answer to this, if you are in this hole, the answer is group action, not necessarily legal action. The problem with legal action is that all the causes of action are pretty difficult. You either have a contractual claim against a surveyor or an architect or somebody like that, or if the builder, but then you're talking about a claim within the last 6 years. You may be able to get a claim under the builder's warranty.
If the builder is still around, of course.
The warranty should be okay. I mean, if it's backed by an insurance company.
Even if they built it in the 1960s or 70s, Richard?
Well, the builder's warranties usually last, I think, about 10 years. So if it was built in the last 10 years, you might be able to make a claim under the
NHBC we're talking about here, I then assume.
Yes, we are. Yeah. That stands for National House Building Council.
Yes.
You may be able to get a claim under that. If it's more than 10 years, your best bet is to form a group with the people in your block in the same position as you. There are a number of these action groups. I think, as far as I'm aware, the best known one that I'm aware of is a thing called UK Cladding Action Group, I think it's called.
Okay, I'll make a note of that.
My advice to anyone in this position is that
go to a group, go to an action group who are actually collecting information, looking at who can be questioned over these sorts of things, because this goes on and on. I mean, you've got people who have now got properties. They're unable to sell. They're unable to remortgage because the buildings, the flats, are not compliant with fire regulations.
Yes.
Are we saying that these people, you mentioned if you're in this hole, and that is a big hole because it could be...
It's a terrible hole.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what do you do? If you've purchased after 2017, and let's assume, as I said, 2018, 2019, can you go and question your surveyor over this and look at whether there's an action there? I'm not trying to, get people to run and start court actions, but surely people purchasing in 2019 and halfway through 2018 should...
Look at that.
Yeah, that I think that's one avenue, but that's an avenue I would say as an individual, because it would be your individual survey. If it's highlighted in there but you didn't pick up on it, or your solicitor didn't pick up on it, I mean, that's another question altogether, isn't it? Because you can't say, well, the report was handed to you, the document was handed to you, and you just didn't read it and didn't read the fact that it's not compliant. But then that what raises the question that comes to my mind is if a survey report after 2017, you know, again, assuming 2018, 2019, highlighted that there was the building was not compliant with fire regulations, then how did the lender lend?
Well, one of the problems at the moment is that mortgagees are not offering mortgages on these types of buildings. So people can't, unless they're cash buyers, they're not going to buy them.
Yeah. And that brings the question, Richard, about the time your survey was done, 2018, 2019, in my mind, I'm sort of inclined to say it couldn't have highlighted the fact that the building wasn't compliant with fire regulations because the lender wouldn't have lent if you went to get a, you know, in the likely event of what our listeners are saying, which is, look, we bought this property, we've got a mortgage on the property. How did the mortgage lender lend?
Well, this is the problem.
Big question.
People didn't appreciate that these panels posed such a risk. Mm. And that's only come out since Grenfell. Whether the truth is suppressed or not is quite another matter. But it's not going to help the people who are in this predicament.
No, indeed. I mean, the government is only funding work related to fire safety on buildings over 18 metres high. There's buildings that are just below 18 metres, or some parts of it are. Does that change anything? Or, you know, is the government saying we're only going to pay, honestly, for 18 metres high? If your building is not 18 metres high, but you've got this cladding on there, then we're not going to fund it. Is that where we are with that, do you think, Richard?
No, I think the position is, you're talking about the Building Safety Fund, I think.
Yes.
And that is a scheme run by the government. In respect of providing remedies for buildings over 18 metres tall, they're not going to replace the cladding above 18 metres and leave it as it is below.
I'm saying if the building is not quite 18 metres high, it's below 18 metres.
Oh, I see.
But it's still got this cladding.
I would have to look at the qualifications for the building fund, but my understanding is that it has to be 18 metres. You need to get the landlord or the freeholder to make an application to the building fund, because I don't believe that individual leaseholders can do it. I think it has to be the freeholder.
Yes, and I guess on that note, you know, you just have to speak to the management agent and the freeholder.
Yes.
And try and push them to try and see whether they can get access to this funding, because that would mean that your service charge and everybody else's service charge wouldn't have to pay for the remedial work to make the building.
To this, again, Hattie, the key to this again is group action. A single leaseholder will be fobbed off, but if there are 50 of you, they won't fob you off.
Yes.
At the moment, the legal remedies are too tricky. The solution is pestering your landlord, pestering your local council, joining an action group. As I say, all of these problems have been, people have been worrying at them legally to find a solution, and there isn't a clear solution yet.
It's sad. It's a very, and you know, it's a problem that a lot of people have had. We've had one listener who said, look, our preferred solution is to return the flat to the company to get our money back. Is there any chance of this happening? And unfortunately, I mean, I can't see a way in how that could even take place unless you actually are able to prove that the company that sold you, and we're talking about an estate agent here, I imagine. Again, we're not talking about a new build. We're talking about an estate agent here has not been honest or purposely told you, you know, that this property is absolutely fire safe and in line with regulations, and your survey reports back that up because they didn't mention it. I mean, there's quite a few loopholes, and I would say go and get legal advice if you're in the position where you've purchased in the last 2 years, as Richard has said, take legal advice on your specific position, because it's when did you purchase the property? What does your survey report say? And, you know, look at, start there. You've got to really start there. And I think the advice to go and seek some action groups who are actively trying to help people in these positions. You've got a louder voice, haven't you, Richard? Yeah, if you're part absolutely. Of a group who know what they're doing.
And Google is very useful in that respect, because you can find an awful lot of information on it. I mean, the government website has a lot of information on this issue. There's an awful lot of it. But anyone in this predicament definitely needs to join with others in order to reach a solution.
Yes, and I think the first aspect would be to perhaps get legal advice on your independent situation, because other owners in the property will not necessarily, you know, be in the same position of you of when they purchased and what their surveyor's report looked like at the time. But then join together to approach action groups who, you know, could help you and advise you and tell you what the latest regulation is and tell you where your building would stand per se in that situation. Litigation against the freeholder, again, we've just very briefly looked at the pitfalls of a freeholder not really having the funds to pay out. And then if your service charge gets affected, you've got losses there. Can you go and claim that from your freeholder of the building? I mean, you've got to get somebody really to go through it with a fine-tooth comb specifically to your situation, and then the action groups on the other side. Richard, thank you ever so much. It's been such a useful podcast. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to record with you. Thank you ever so much.
And you, Hattie.
And I'll say to our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.